the long journey home, along with some of the boys who did the longer journey home, right? Especially since you were down one driver. It was quite a week, I think, for some of you guys. So we are grateful that God brought everyone back safely after. What'd you drive? Did you drive 5,000 miles? 5,000 miles. That's a pretty good week's worth of driving right there. Anyway, just want to also take this time to thank you all for praying for us. It was quite a week for us too, getting some good news. It goes to show me and all of us that, you know, regardless of whether God did this, like, he obviously, this so far has had a good outcome for us. But it's not that way for everyone. And God chooses in his sovereignty sometimes to answer in the way we like, and sometimes he answers in the way we don't like. And it's good to always trust that God is good no matter what happens. And I think of the Berge family and that whole thing, because, you know, in a way, that's not the outcome they wanted. I'm sure at the end here, they were happy that he could go home. But it's still not, it's not right. It's not what God originally intended. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. We appreciate it very much, all the meals that were brought there for that kind of flurry of a week and a half where we weren't quite sure what was going on. But anyway, all right, so we're going back to Revelation. It's been a while since I did the last one in Revelation. We are ready for chapter 13. And like I've said up to this point, there, you know, some parts of Revelation are fairly straightforward. Other parts are not so straightforward and can get a little bit confusing as you look at them and read them. And this part gets a little bit more into that. I'm not quite sure what's going on. But I'll do the best I can. And I, like I've said many times before, I'm not up here saying that, hey, I've got to figure it out. I understand all of what's going on here, and I'm just standing up here telling you this is what it is. That's not the case. I'll just do my best to put it out there and say what God wants me to say. So I'm going to go ahead and read all of chapter 13. I'm going to do a good bit of reading then, because I'm going to read, after I'm done with chapter 13, I'm going to go back into the Old Testament, into the book of Daniel, and read Daniel chapter 7. There's a lot of, I think, interconnectedness between these two chapters, and it helps to kind of read them back to back, and you can kind of make some of those connections. All right, so Revelation chapter 13. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems or crowns on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words. And it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and nation and language. Over every tribe and people and language and nation. And all who dwell on the earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear to hear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence or on its behalf, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. All right, we're going to jump straight back to Daniel chapter 7 and read the entirety of chapter 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, 'Arise, devour much flesh.' After this, I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with four wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions. And behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened." Let me just stop real quick, and I should have stopped before this last section. So he's talking about the beast, describing the beast, and then in verse 9 it says, "As I looked," and then it's like it shifts the aspect over to here and says, you know, while I'm still watching all this, all of a sudden it's like, whoop, over here, and he sees the throne's place, the Ancient of Days, and all that's this last section I just read. So then he's going to go, like, he's going to turn his head and look back at what's continuing to happen out in front of him with the beasts. Okay, so now we'll pick it back up as he's done describing basically God's throne room, and now he's looking back to the beast. And I looked then, because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. Remember, back over to this scene. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. All right, so that's the vision. Vision's done. Now Daniel is now kind of talking to himself. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. I think this would be an angel he is speaking to now. These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, and which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. And about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up, and before which three of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke great things, and that seemed greater than its companions. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth, and trample it down and break it to pieces. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the former ones. He shall put down 3 kings, and he shall speak words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law, and they shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away, to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole earth shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. His kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. All right. So that's kind of a mouthful there. But I wanted to read them back to back because I'm pretty sure that the little horn spoken of there in Daniel's vision is definitely connected, possibly is the same thing as is talked about here in Revelation chapter 13. Now, the beast it's described a little bit differently, but I think there's a chance it's the same one. This, you know, the fourth beast in Daniel's vision was different than all the rest of them. For one thing, the first three, and we're pretty much told in Daniel, it's the vision is interpreted for Daniel, and it's fairly cut and dried. Most people would say it's fairly cut and dried what those first three beasts are. Even the fourth one, you've got, you know, the first one is the kingdom of the Babylonians, where you have Nebuchadnezzar, which was then taken over by the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, which would be signified by the bear, who's raised up on one side. That kind of signifies the, you have this two-part kingdom, the Medes and the Persians, but yet the one side, I think it's the Medes, end up being stronger than the other side. And then they rule until the third one comes along, which is the Greek Empire, the Greek Macedonian Empire. And it's signified by a leopard, which is very fast. And that was Alexander the Great, who then came through, wiped out the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. Ultimately was divided into four, which talks about the four there after Alexander's death. It was divided into four parts and kind of kept going on until the Roman Empire came and took over them. And that's the fourth beast. So the Roman Empire is the fourth beast. But then it gets just a little bit fuzzy after that. Because, you know, the first three, another kingdom came and took them over. But here in Revelation and in Daniel, the fourth one says is destroyed and thrown into the fire. So it's the fourth one is not taken over, as it were, by another superseding kingdom. It more or less has its power until Christ himself, who is going to take dominion. He is the fourth. The kingdom of Christ is the superseding kingdom. And then he's the one who throws that kingdom or the leaders or whatever into the fire, both in Daniel and in Revelation. Now, what gets a little bit harder to understand is, you know, those first three, we look back in history, you can read what happened, you can make the connections, and things kind of fall into place. But then here we are, 2,500, 2,300 years after the Roman Empire came, you know, the fourth beast started or began, and it just gets a little bit muddled after that. But it's helpful to connect these two chapters, because in Daniel, there are more things that are explained and interpreted to him. Whereas in Revelation, that's not really the case. But I think we can take some of those things and flip them over into Revelation and help it make sense. So, okay, let's also remember, we are right now in the part of Revelation that is symbolic. Remember, I've said this almost every time I've preached on Revelation. There's parts of it that is more to be taken literally. And then there's parts that are, it literally says this is a symbol. This is something that's symbolic. And we're still in that section. Here, I think it was the beginning of chapter 12 is when, you know, you have the dragon coming and going after the woman. And that is specifically says this is a great symbol or a great sign was in heaven. And we're still in that. This is still a part of that. And, you know, back in Daniel's dreams and visions, this beast, it was not a literal beast. It was signifying these kingdoms that would arise and fall again. And I think it's significant that this beast rises out of the sea. And the sea is kind of an interesting thing. If you look at what was a Jewish view of the sea, and I'll say this now because it'll lay a bit of a foundation for later, like I'm talking, I don't know how many sermons down the road we'll get into Revelation 21, 22, where it makes this little comment that there was no more sea. And I'm sure some of you have read that and are like, but I really like the ocean. You're telling me there's no sea there? There's no seashores and sand and all that? Like, there's got to be that in heaven, right? Or the new earth. Well, I think it helps to understand what the Jewish view of the sea was. So if you look at the Jews as a people, they were not a sea people at all. They basically lived in the mountains. You know, you have the Mediterranean Sea. The sea coast was pretty rough and rugged there in their area, so it wasn't great for like seaports and all that. I mean, obviously, way even, you know, toward the beginning of the Israelite kingdom, Solomon had ships that he sent out, which those, pretty sure those would have went out through the Red Sea and not actually through the Mediterranean. Generally speaking, though, the Jews were not, they were not a sea people at all. Their storms came from the west. They came from the sea. Even the Sea of Galilee is known for its violent storms that would just kind of pop up. And so to a Jew, the sea was a place of danger and a place of chaos. That's where things detrimental and bad came from, the sea. And so you have these beasts that arise out of the sea. And this is, let me go back a little bit. For instance, the Philistines are another one. Those were like the arch enemy of the Israelites. And they were known as the people of the sea, the sea peoples. They quite possibly came from across the sea. Like they, somewhere over, this is a whole kind of a study for a different time is where they came from. But there's good possibility, I think, that they would have come from the islands over near Crete. So kind of in the western Mediterranean is where these people came from. And they came across the sea to the land of Israel there. And then, you know, we all know the stories of the Israelites and the Philistines, is that they were their enemies. And they came from the sea. So everything, generally speaking, bad things always come from the sea. In a Jew's mind. Forward that now into Revelation 22, makes a little bit more sense that he says there will be no more sea. I don't think it actually means there won't be any oceans. But it just means the source of the chaos that's always coming against us as God's people will be gone, will be done away with. So now, bring that back into the imagery here. You've got this beast rising out of the sea. Once again, there is something coming after God and his people, and it comes out of the sea. But then, and this one, it says, has 10 horns. No, 7 heads and 10 horns. And in Daniel, that one doesn't say anything about the heads. It just says it has 10 horns. And I don't know, you can kind of go back and forth. I think it makes sense that they, if they're not the same beast, they're at least very much different angles on the same events in history, basically, that they're signifying. So in verse 3, actually before I go there, so here's a way to look at what these things are signifying. So the heads and the horns can be interpreted as kingdoms or kings, especially, I think, in Revelation 13. The heads, it seems to make more sense that the heads are signifying a kingdom, or in our modern language, a country, okay? We don't really use the word kingdom very much anymore. But countries, or, you know, principalities, that are ruled by someone or something. So then the horns are more apt to signify an actual ruler, like a single ruler or a ruling body or something, more than a country. So okay, it's easy for me to get kind of confused going back and forth between the two. So the heads and horns. Horns specifically can be interpreted as these kings. So in this instance, you would have 7 countries that make up a conglomerate, or a, I don't know what's the word? I'm looking for a word and I can't think of it. A alliance or a federation or something. A group of countries have gotten together, and they are together this beast. Now, there have been, in the last 2,000 years since this was written, there have been a whole lot of speculations as to who this beast is, who it signifies, and it seems like in every time of history, you know, the Christian people have taken, you know, something that is in their experience and said, oh, okay, this is the beast. So, you know, back back in the, fairly early in the Catholic Church era, you know, when the popes became a thing, you know, it was, oh, well, the Pope is the beast, and the Pope is the little horn, and all this. And then later, you know, in the 600s AD and forward from that, that's when Islam started to rise. And Islam was the beast. Islam was the little horn, or the imams were the little horn, and all this. And so, what do you do with all that stuff? And like today, we're all familiar with, in the last 20 years especially, it's kind of this rise in interest of the Antichrist, and who's the Antichrist. And I'm sure the Left Behind series did plenty to foment that. You know, we're all looking for, oh, who's this guy going to be? You know, it must be Obama, or it must be, who knows? We're always looking for this one person. I say we, I'm not just saying us. I'm just saying in general, the Christian world, and especially in the last 20, 30 years, has very, very much been looking for that one person. And I think once we get to the end of this, hopefully I can convey that I don't think that's the most important thing that we're supposed to get out of this passage. Not saying that it's bad to dig into something and speculate, but don't let it become the main thing, because that's not the main thing here in this passage. Okay, so at some point I'm going to kind of back out and give an overview of this, but I'm not quite sure it's time yet. So let's just keep going down through kind of verse by verse. So one of the heads, back to the seven heads, seems to have a mortal wound, but this mortal wound was healed. So think about it. If the head is a country, then this could mean that, okay, there's a country or a kingdom that we thought was dead and gone to the ashes of history, but it revives again. It's not actually dead. It comes back. And there's different lines of thought in this. Some people think that, oh, it's the Roman Empire will be revived again. And another group of people thinks that, no, it's the Islamic Empire that will rise again, which that one you don't hear a whole lot about. I don't know. I didn't learn that much about it in school, but the Islamic, they call it the caliphate. I'm sure you've heard the word caliphate in the last 10 years. But it's basically an Islamic empire. You know, back when Islam began in the 600s, it became their driving force to take over the world. And it wasn't very long before they had a huge empire. Stretched a lot of what was the Roman Empire, not all of it, but a lot of it was taken over by Islam and the Muslims during that time. And it more or less continued, not as a whole unit, but as kind of loosely connected units. See, they can't agree amongst themselves either, which is why they can't really unite very well either. But anyway, it continued until 100 to 200 years ago, some of this stuff started to fall apart. And there is a sentiment alive today in that world that they want to revive the Islamic Caliphate. And, you know, some of what we see going on, like even ISIS, Hamas, and the extremist groups are very much, that's their ideology. That's what they want. They want to revive this giant Islamic empire. And they really want to take over the world. So there are, when you look at, okay, which one of these fits best into Revelation 13? I don't know. It's hard to say. There are some elements of multiple different ones that make sense. One of the things that makes a lot of sense with the Islamic Empire being connected with this is, you know, some of what it does. You know, it talks about basically grinding and like grinding the people into the ground with their heel. It's a very brutal empire. And of all the ideologies that are alive on the world today, there's not, I'm not really aware of any that are as brutal as Islam. They just, I don't know, their value of human life is so small. I mean, they just, it's crazy. And you all know what I'm talking about. We see this on the news. Now, there's definitely plenty of other places evil arises, but as a organized vision, that's what that is. Extremist Islam is about the most brutal thing that is, that's going right now. So that makes a little bit of sense. But then there's the other side says, no, this guy's going to come, you know, it's going to be a European Roman Empire. I'm just going to leave it at that because I don't know. I don't know. It makes some sense on either side. But I want to go now, keep going down. This beast, or the little horn, actually there, it's actually the beast. It's only given authority for a short time. I've mentioned this before, and I think it's something to not forget. You know, it's easy going into Revelation to be afraid. We shouldn't be afraid. It's only a short time. It is given authority, remember? And if something is given authority, it means it is not the supreme authority, right? Something else is giving it authority. It's a good thing to remember. All right, so on down, it says that it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them, which in Daniel it says almost the exact same thing. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation. So this looks like it's a pretty far-reaching thing. All who dwell on earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. This begs the question, you know, don't be afraid, but it is good to ask yourself, is my name written in the book of life? Remember I said let's not get too stuck on some of the things that you're like, what in the world is this? This is one of the things to take out of this, and this is like one of the main things. Is your name written in the book of life? Because if it is, you will not worship the beast. That's what Scripture says. It's pretty simple. And then is verse 9 and 10. And this is an interesting total sidetrack into something else. Verse 9 says, if anyone has an ear to hear, let him hear. And verse 10, if anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here's a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Now, why in the world? What kind of an encouragement is that? If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword he must be slain. You know, doesn't sound super encouraging to me. But like a lot of New Testament things, this is an allusion. It's not necessarily a direct quote of something in the Old Testament, but it's an allusion to a passage, and that passage holds the key to why this is actually an encouragement. And I'm going to read that. So back in Jeremiah, there's actually two places that this is alluding to. The one in Jeremiah is the most obvious because it's closest to the exact wording. In Jeremiah 43, verse 11, I'm trying to think here. I should give a little bit of context. I might start in verse 10. This is talking about, so at this point, Jeremiah is in Egypt, and he's making a prophecy against Egypt. And so verse 10 says, and say to them, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will send and take Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will set his throne above these stones that I have hidden, and he will spread his royal canopy over them. He shall come and strike the land of Egypt, giving over to the pestilence those who are doomed to pestilence, and to captivity those who are doomed to captivity, to the sword those who are doomed to the sword. I shall kindle a fire in the temples of the gods of Egypt, and he shall burn them, and carry them away captive. And he shall clean the land of Egypt as a shepherd cleans his cloak of vermin, and he shall go away from there in peace. He shall break the obelisks of Hierapolis, which is in the land of Egypt, and the temples of the gods of Egypt shall he burn with fire. You know, in a Jew's mind, Egypt was a place that signified the old life, captivity. We've heard there's other places in the New Testament that talk about Egypt as, you know, signifying our life before we were saved. And then, you know, we go through the Red Sea, we're baptized, and then Canaan is the new life, the new land. And here in Jeremiah, he's saying, okay, Egypt and all that it signifies to you, all these things in the past, the captivity and all this stuff. It says, God's going to bring Nebuchadnezzar, which by himself wasn't exactly the greatest human being ever. But he says he's going to bring Nebuchadnezzar, and he's going to come and he's going to clean out the land of Egypt. All that Egypt signifies, Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and wipe out. And it's like God is saying, I will raise up someone or something to wipe out what to you is your suffering and all that stuff. So that's why this is almost a direct quote from that. So if in the midst of this whole thing with the beast, you have very difficult times for believers. It says here there he's even allowed to make war on the saints and conquer them. In the middle of that, he's reminding whoever is reading this, okay, this beast, whatever it is, the system of government that is oppressing and killing you, at the right time, I will raise something or someone up, which in this case, I'm pretty convinced is actually Jesus Christ at the end of time, where he will just do that to this kingdom. In the middle of that, don't forget that I, God, at some point in time, will come and I'm going to clean house. What you think is this grand, strong authority doesn't hold anything. They're not bigger than God. I'm not going to go into the second part. 13 kind of goes in two sections. What I want to leave with us is this. So if you look throughout history, ever since Nimrod started this whole kingdom building thing, the empire building thing, human beings are always seeking to condense power to themselves. Just over and over, the kingdoms set about to expand their power and to put other people under their thumb. And they've got this idea that I'm going to take over the world. How many men throughout history have thought that and have tried? And they've gotten, you know, some of them have gotten further than others. But everyone wants to take over the world. I think this is because they're all driven by the spiritual forces of darkness that are in opposition to God. God has declared, I am God, there is no other. There is none above me. No one will take my place and no one can supersede my authority. Yet people continue to try over and over and over again. And today, you know, we hear this thing about, oh, well, there's going to be a new world order. There's going to be, you know, this global government takeover and all this stuff. You know what? This is not new. People throughout history have heard this kind of thing. And you know what? Kingdoms rise and kingdoms fall. But the word of the Lord will stand forever. And there in Daniel, I love what it said there toward, I should just go back so I get it right. Multiple times in Daniel chapter 7, it says things like this. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever and ever. So that's, I think that's the main point. We'll get, next time we'll get into the mark of the beast and more about the Antichrist and all that, but never forget, kingdoms will rise and kingdoms will fall, but it is your Father and my Father who is the king that rules over all, and not anything that any earthly kingdom will try to do can ever change that.